This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
It is 6:06 in the evening and you're with Lynn on the evening edition. It is just me for the rest of the week. Just letting you guys know in case you were expecting to hear either Kelvin or Hezril. They are going to be back in the studio next week. In the meantime, just me, so please get in touch. In the meantime, just wanted to let you know what's going on because, of course, we heard during the 5 o'clock hour the announcement of our new cabinet. Prime Minister Tan Sri Muhyiddin Yassin said essentially he believes that this cabinet is one that is of integrity and caliber, which is something that he's been saying since the very beginning. He also added that they've been screened by both MACC as well as the police. And, you know, first impressions, this is a cabinet that is quite a bit larger. We're seeing some segmenting. For example, the Ministry of Education has been split into MOE and the Return of Higher Education. We're also seeing a split of, I believe, MESTEC. You know, now there's going to be a dedicated Environmental Ministry as well as a Science and Technology Ministry. And above all, we're not going to have a deputy prime minister. Instead, that role is going to be supplemented by four senior ministers. Their portfolios are things like international trade and industries, defence, development and infrastructure, as well as education. So these four ministers are going to be the prime minister's reps and assist him in prime ministerial duties. Those include things like chairing cabinet meetings when he's not available. And interestingly, for one of the most important portfolios, which is, of course, the finance ministry, the appointee is a political outsider. That's Tengku Datuk Sri Zafrul Tengku Abdul Aziz, who's currently the CEO of CIMB Bank. He's going to be appointed as a senator, doesn't belong to a political party. And we actually have quite a few appointees who fall into that category. So again, going to be interesting to see how that plays out. Before the 6 o'clock news, we spoke with Keith Leong of KRA to get his take. And he talked about exactly that, you know, this idea of having four senior ministers in place of a deputy prime minister. And while this is pretty unique and new to us, this is something that countries like Singapore have seen. With that said, though, he also mentioned that it's somewhat unprecedented because Singapore's senior ministers are usually elder statesmen who act as advisors and don't hold active portfolios, unlike what we're seeing here. So I'm not going to bore you by listing every single new minister because it would take a while. It did take a while earlier. But there are some interesting new developments and we're going to be examining that in a bit more detail. I think it's worth saying right off the top that we are seeing some old names return, albeit in new posts. And actually, the only person who sort of went through this change while still maintaining the initial portfolio is YB Zuraida Kamarudin, who is still the Minister of Housing. And so that's just, she's the only one. If you have questions, if you have thoughts, send them our way. You can call us at 7733 2900. You can WhatsApp 018-789-8899 and tweet us at BFM Radio. We're going to be getting to the messages during and after our chat with our guest, who's Dr. Daniel Mohamed Yusof, Associate Professor at the International Institute of Islamic Thought and Civilization. He is a professor of political science, actually. Daniel, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you. Good evening.
So firstly, can you give us your first impressions of the cabinet lineup?
I think it's the large-scale changes. I think a few hours before the announcement was made at 5, we began receiving brief news reports pertaining to the creation of the four senior party posts. I think it's interesting because, in a way, it's sidestepping the poison chalice of the deputy prime ministership post, as well as it also sidesteps in a way the issue of party seniority as well. So these are, I think, two fundamental shifts with regards to the political culture in the landscape that we have in Malaysia with regards to this particular cabinet announcement.
So we received a pair of questions earlier, which essentially are, you know, looking at the same thing. One is from Jinathan, the other from Chung. And they both wanted to know how a possible vote of no confidence would affect the cabinet. Now, I know that this is very speculative. We are pretty much 2 months away from Parliament actually sitting. But could you give us your take on that?
I think the delay in the presiding of Parliament in March to May was mainly to address this issue of cabinet appointment, to also prove to the electorate that there is a government that can be made from this arrangement that can deliver services to the people. And so I have a feeling that there might be a more support changing camps between now and May. And so the issue of a vote of no confidence might actually not even arise by the time we preside over Parliament in May. That's my take on it anyway.
And you addressed just now, you know, this idea of avoiding the poison chalice that is the Deputy Prime Ministerial role. But that's just one of the larger scale changes that have been made. What do you think the introduction of senior ministers is going to do in terms of, I suppose, particularly workflow within the government?
Mm-hmm. It's not necessarily a cohesive government that we're talking about right now. It's probably more of a conciliatory government. That's how I see it. They're sidestepping the issue because of the opposition position of the parties that are now made up into the government that we have now. So I think it's about managing the trust level between the electorate and the government. So it's perhaps best not to emphasize on a particular party or a component member, hence giving certain key senior positions in the cabinet to various parties. It's again another way of sidestepping an issue that probably cannot be resolved at the inner circle level of this new coalition.
So we've also heard, of course, Prime Minister Tan Sri Muhyiddin Yassin stating his intent to be a prime minister for all Malaysians. Do you see this reflected in the cabinet?
It's about, I think, again, managing the trust deficit when you have a new minister for unity, for example, right? So how will that ministry be governed? Will it be governed to actually promote unity, or can it actually be exploited instead to perform the task of surveillance on society? Because the trust level is not so good at this point of time. I think there would be speculation about how various ministries would function. So, you know, Kementerian Perpaduan is one, Kementerian Alam Sekitar is another one. PAS is, I think, helming this ministry. Mm-hmm. For the environment, as well as for the law ministry as well. So I think that there is a lot of, I think, I wouldn't say fear, but definitely distrust at this point of time. But I think the electorate will give the amount of time needed, at least in the next few months or so, to see the kind of statements that will be made initially by the incoming ministers.
So in an article in The Star, you actually pointed out some flaws in Pakatan Harapan's administration, including the inability to anticipate how PPBM, a minority party within that larger coalition, would fit. With this new lineup then, what potential areas of conflict or disagreement do you see coming up?
With the lineup of this cabinet and what's happening at state level, I think that there is the possibility of reconciliation between UMNO and PPBM. So perhaps there is this paving of the way for a kind of PPBM and UMNO reunification, perhaps into a new entity. This is speculation, but it seems that they're trying to find a middle ground where they can work together. And I think from this cabinet line now, and what's happening at state level, it seems to point in that direction.
Can we just touch briefly on a ministry that you brought up, which was the National Unity Ministry, where you know, you said just earlier that you're not sure what to expect. I guess I'm asking you to, I'm forcing the issue here by asking you, what do you think we can expect? I mean, it's an interesting ministry to have.
Well, it was a ministry that was, I think, fairly dysfunctional in the previous government.
Yeah.
So we're starting at rock bottom anyway. So, so I think it's, I wouldn't say it's a negative point of view at all. It's all on the onus of the new minister to come in and prove that unity is a key issue that we want to address in this new Malaysia, or newer Malaysia. Yeah.
And something else that you wrote was that during Pakatan Harapan's time, they managed to, one thing that they did manage to do was to decrease the power distance between people and politicians. Do you think that this was something that did matter to the electorate? Was it actually felt at ground level?
I think initially it was a power distance that was managed well, but as a result of the recent drama that we had in our political horizon, the trust deficit is the power distance.
Mm.
So how do you rebuild that? So this is the issue that has to be addressed. Even I think as I'm speaking, I do know that there are movements at the ground level, not exactly at people power movement level, but definitely amongst civil society organizations and so on, who are collaborating and I think trying to force the issue with regards to accountability of the members of parliament with regards to the mandate of the previous election and how, for example, when the Prime Minister did not disclose about the number that he had and who supported him in relation to the majority support that he had. So a number of CSO are wanting to find out a bit more about the transparency that can be made with regards to this, the accountability of the members of parliament. So, I mean, these are issues that would, I think, continue to arise, especially when you see that amongst the cabinet members, we see people from the group that came from the, who are former members of PKR, being given ministerial positions. So this can be a problem with the electorate as well.
And going back to the fact that we have seen this delaying of parliament, does that delay actually buy time for these new ministers to prove themselves or start introducing policies, particularly, I guess, for the people who are political outsiders?
Yes, it does. I think it's a positive spin. The time factor is something which is positive for this new cabinet to prove itself, at least at policy declaration level.
Do you think that 2 months will be enough for that?
No, but I'm sure we'll see a fair bit more of politicking in between now and May.
Yeah, that's a fair point. And lastly, Datuk Sri Dr. Haji Zulkifli Mohamed, who is currently the Federal Territories Mufti, is also a political outsider. He's being appointed as a religious minister. Would this be the first time that we're seeing a state Mufti being appointed as, you know, a religious affairs minister? And what do you think a Mufti would bring to the cabinet table?
I think he's always been a figure that is respected by the Malay Muslim masses as well as by the non-Muslims. So I think it's a very encouraging step that's taken by our Prime Minister with regards to his appointment. I'm looking forward to see his approach to policymaking and performance.
Daniel, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you.
That was Dr. Daniel Mohamed Yusuf, Associate Professor of Political Science at IIUM. We've been asking you for your thoughts. You can, of course, call us. What do you think of the new cabinet now that it's finally been announced? That number is 7733 2900. You can also WhatsApp 018-789-8899 and tweet us at BFM Radio. We're going to be back to read those messages shortly. Keep it here on the Evening Edition, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my, BFM 89.9, the business station.